Get ready to mark your calendars for the first ever Grid City Music Fest, brought to you by The State Room Presents and Grid City Beer Works, located at the Commonwealth Room on 2100 South next to the track Central Point Station in South Salt Lake. Grid City Music Fest represents what South Salt Lake's new Creative Industries Zone is all about. There will be live bands, mouth-watering drinks from South Salt Lake's breweries and distilleries, fun games, and awesome vendors to meet. There are six nights of the Grid City Music Fest for everyone to enjoy. Saturday, July 16th, which is a free night, Sunday, July 17th, Friday, August 5th, Saturday, August 6th, Saturday, August 20th, and the last day, Sunday, August 21st. Head to GridCityMusicFest.com for your tickets. Come say hi and hang out with all of us. This is an event you do not want to miss out on. Until the next Music Fest, my friends. You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, friends, we are currently in the Dondo. No one knows exactly what that is except for us, but I'm here with my dear friend, Tanya. Tanya, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I missed you.
You missed me so much that you had me on the podcast like twice in a month.
What's wrong with that?
Absolutely
There's
nothing.
Nothing wrong with that. But I have missed you. How have you been?
I've been good. Just, you know, living the dream, making beer, having fun.
Yeah. How was Pride Week? I missed it, unfortunately. I was really too hungover. I was celebrating something.
You know, I struggle. Not that I struggle with pride. That's the wrong way to word it. It's the same weekend as the Mountain Brewers Beer Fest.
Right.
So every year I have to choose between gay and beer, my two favorite things, and it just doesn't feel fair.
Yeah, it is not fair.
No.
It really
is a travesty, but
it is.
I was very excited because my pride beer that I brewed with Shades won a gold medal.
Hey! And what's it called?
Sounds Gammon.
Oh my God, it's a prickly pear, right?
Yes. And Don was there to accept it for me, and it's the next best thing to be able to accept it myself.
I was watching Don win that and accept it, and I took a screenshot and sent it to Don. And I think it was one of the coolest things ever because I kind of teared up a little bit because I feel like I've hung out with you more than I have Don, but when that happened, I was like, that's my crew. And it's not my crew, but like, it's my crew, right? It was an awesome time, but.
Do you need a tissue?
In a minute. Yeah, I will. Brenda, just kidding. You're a good girl. But Tanya, when that happened, when that beer won, what did that mean to you?
To me, I was a part of that beer from the initial concept of just suggesting, hey, have you guys ever done a beer for Pride? And didn't know at the time, as we've already discussed, that I would be the one that was actually brewing it as well. So I just really believed that I could get behind beer and do the thing. And I worked really hard on marketing it. Don and I did a bunch of silly videos. And I said, give me the Pride beer and I'll make it something to be proud of. And I mean, not only did it win gold, but we've been completely out of it for a week now.
Yeah, you sold out during Pride Week, right?
We sold out in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, shame on you. Make more.
We are.
Like I say. So, Tanya, we keep talking about this this Pride beer, and you keep mentioning this Don guy. You're like, who the fuck is this Don guy?
I don't know. I was blindfolded, taken to this condo, and I've never seen this man before.
This Dondo. We're in the Dondo right now.
I already sent out a text, 911.
Which is funny. I have a story for that. Remind me that story, by the way. But Tanya, introduce this guest we have today who we're going to interview right now. We're going to hit. We have in chains right now waiting to be just interrogated.
All right. I would love to introduce to everybody my wonderful friend, coworker, work husband. I call him my best friend. I don't know if that's a consensual term, but I love this man. I work with him every day. He's incredibly talented and smart and gifted, and he makes damn good beer. It's Don
Moore.
Yeah, I can't see you when you blush, though, because like every other brewer, you have a giant beard.
It happens. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, you do have a great beard. And you have great curly hair, by the way. And it's reddish.
Yeah, reddish.
And I like that.
Yeah, I can tell he likes it.
Because curls are the best.
Curls are the best.
They're, and you have tight curls.
It's a hard type of hair to take care of, but it's gorgeous.
And your frames are fantastic, by the way. Oh, thank you. You've always had great frames, right?
He does. Those are his, well, now they're your regular everyday glasses, but I like to comment on his frames a lot. I'm like, ooh, you got your fancy glasses on today.
So Don Moore, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you. Thanks
for
having
me. How you been, man?
Been great. It's been wonderful.
What's it like to win a bunch of medals?
Oh, it's very loud. They clink a lot against your chest.
Oh, is it a little heavy?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Did it get in your beard at all?
Yeah.
So if I remember, you got 1 gold, 2 silvers, 3 bronze, or 3 silvers, 2 bronze?
2 gold, 1 silver, 3 bronze.
Sorry. Well, sorry. So many gold. My bad, dude. So is that one we get? 2 golds, 1 silver, 3 bronze?
Yep.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations on winning the most medals in Utah, I think.
No, I think TF beat us.
TF? Okay, yep. Sorry. Second most medals.
And well-deserved as well. They won in the lager categories.
Yeah, so. I mean, winning an award in a lager category, I think, is fantastic. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because to make a great lager, you cannot fuck up, period.
No, start to finish, you have to be 100% the entire time. Any flaw is going to show up.
And so. Since I've known about you and known of you, you've always appreciated clean and great beer. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So winning these medals through shade, what does that mean to you? Winning a medal at all and brewing?
Winning a medal at all in brewing, like some of these beers, like they're not of my design. The ones that we won medals for, like Ty Tomka, like that's Marcio, and what was it? Peach Cobbler or whatever, Boysenberry, I think that we won. Those are not of my design, but I brewed them. Sure. So that feels good. Sure. Like I can take the actions.
Baby.
I can take the actions that make award-winning beer.
I like that.
And that's really nice. Yeah.
So what was it like let me get this real quick. What's your take in your relationship with Tanya? Because Tanya has talked you up. To you, Tanya is, or to you, in Tanya's mind, you are like the best thing ever, I think, since sliced bread.
I wouldn't go that far. Come on.
I mean, hey, listen. But so what, I want to hear from your mouth, what's it like to have Tanya as the other half?
Tanya's great. I honestly picked her out and I was like, you need to come work with me now. We met when she was still a bartender, and then like after talking a lot, it came through like, oh, this girl's like super, super passionate about beer and, you know, also really cool to talk to. And super hard worker. So when it came to the fact of we needed someone else in the brewery, I was like, hey, I need you. I need you to come in here and do this thing right now. So it's been great. It's been wonderful. She's a super hard worker. It's been 3 months since she came into production side. Brewing solo batches. I don't have to supervise her in the cellar. She knows what she's doing. It's very eager learner. I'm glad to have her around. And she's just like an all around great person. She's a little gem.
Tanya, now you're blushing. What?
There's a lot of comedy behind the scenes too. I can do some pretty space. I can be a little bit absent-minded sometimes. So we have some good moments where I'm just like a Mr. Bean around the brewery, but I do get stuff done.
Hey, Mr. Bean is one of the top comedians of all time in the UK. area. So yeah, it's a compliment to yourself. But Tanya, you made this comment, I hope I can bring it up, but you said that you could go to Don for anything, whether it's advice, questions, you can go cry in him, like whatever it is.
Oh yeah.
So what's it like to have him like side by, like what's it like to work with him? Like what's it like to have him now, and we're going to interview him?
I mean, he's been an amazing mentor. I couldn't do it without him, and I don't think that I could work at any other brewery and get the level of support, you know, physical, emotional, mental support. Because, I mean, it's been a hard thing to learn going from no production experience to being fully in it, especially at a place like Shades where there really are only kind of 3 or 4 of us kind of back there. I don't know if anyone else would have had the patience for me.
Mm.
Or if somebody didn't find me funny or my shenanigans entertaining, that would be bad.
Because I think right now you guys are like the poster children for Shades at the moment.
Yeah.
Like every other Shades post is you guys doing some type of Shenanigans.
We try to do silly stuff. I mean, Tanya tries to do silly stuff, and she's like, you have to come be silly with me.
Like, all right, cool. But you kind of like that, though.
Yeah.
So what's it like to work for or with Tanya? Like, what's it like to have Tanya as your left-hand man?
It's always amazing. Like, right now I'm having her go through the John Palmer How to Brew book, which is like
highlight
the Bible, the Bible of everything. I'm like, she's great. She's done everything and wonderful. And like, hey, you need to read this book. Hey, you need to read this book. And in this past month, past week, I'm like, I bought you a copy of this book. Your assignment for the week is to read this chapter.
Good. I have homework now.
And have you been reading it?
I have at work.
Yeah.
When I've got a nice
it's,
little,
it's
like,
work related. So yeah. Don't do that at home.
Okay.
But no, it's wonderful working with her. It's hard to find people that are willing to put in the effort and energy that it takes to, and the attention to detail it takes to make good beer. And even with coming into production with no experience, Tanya has, just absolutely exploded with enthusiasm to be an eager learner. It's wonderful.
John, you're a very calm and well-versed individual, and I appreciate that. Oh, it's really cool to meet you and like sit in your dondo. I love it, dude.
Yeah.
Where do you come from? Where are you from? Are you a Utah local?
I'm not.
Savage. Where are you from?
Born in Georgia.
Wow. What? Wow.
But I was a military brat, so I was always moving around. Like, I've been to so many states. I went from Georgia to Korea to California, Germany, Oklahoma, Washington, Nebraska, then Utah in like 2004, I think. And then I joined the military and did Texas. And then now I'm back in Utah. A little bit of time in Iraq.
What part of Texas, if you don't mind asking?
The best part, Killeen, Fort Hood area. It's
not the best part. Jokes. Full of jokes, Don. But since you've been in Utah, you've been liking it?
No, I've been here since 2000, in my adult life, since 2010. And it's been good. I mean, from Utah 2010 to Utah 2022 is a huge improvement. Salt Lake is amazing. I love living in the valley. North and south of here is strange.
Easy. Some of us live south of here. Easy. No, I get you. But so a local-ish, but you feel local-ish. Like
I've been here for a while. Yeah.
Is Utah home?
We're Utah's home now. Yeah. I mean, I own the condo here. This is great.
The dondo.
Yeah. The dondo.
We're calling it the dondo. We're making this thing. It's dondo.
Yeah, no, it feels like home now because I'm so familiar with it. And yeah, Salt Lake City is a great place. It's like a nice little island. And yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Do you think you're going to be here? How much longer do you think you're going to be here in Salt Lake City?
Good question. It all depends on what the future holds. You know, I got a 30-year mortgage. So that'll keep me here for a bit.
For at least 2 years.
Yeah. No, it all depends. The ultimate goal is to like open a brewery, and Utah is not very friendly to like small startup breweries. You've got to like step in at $2 million, whereas other states you can definitely cut back on some of your capital expenses. So if we can open a brewery in Utah, if the laws become a little bit more friendly, it could be a very long-term thing, but also like you can go right across the border to Colorado and open up a brewery for $500,000 rather than $2 million. And it would be just fine.
That's awesome. So why beer? How did you get into the beer? So right now you currently work for Shades, right?
I'm currently for Shades.
So how did you get, talk us through my military brat to Shades.
So there's like two parts to me getting into craft beer. First one was like way back in 2012. I was going to University of Utah full-time. I was working full-time. I just got a divorce. My weekends were homework. So the only thing that I did for fun was I'd go to the liquor store. I'm like, oh, what's this interesting thing? And then I'd play video games and drink.
It
was a fun time. And then I had a Detour IPA, 750-milliliter bottles, caged and corked, which is absurd to think about right now.
Yeah.
I remember those.
Back in 2012... like putting a cork in an IPA. Like, I don't know. That was just what
savages
Uinta was doing. But that was like the first IPA I'd ever had. And I tasted it and I'm like, oh my God. And like, this beer tastes like weed. So I went on a deep dive into IPAs and then craft beer as a whole. And I just kept kind of like doing it on the side. And then in like 2015, 2016, there's a lot of existential crises going on. I was doing a lot of psychedelic drugs, and there was a mushroom trip that I had where I was using it as like a meditative, like aid.
Sure.
To like figure out, you know, what's going on in this life. And one of the things I was trying to figure out was like, how do you live a fulfilling life? And there was a mushroom trip that I had that was, I'd come up with like three things that are always good to have in your life: and the meaningful relationships, memorable experiences, and work that you're proud of.
I like that.
So polyamorous, tons of meaningful relationships in my life, tons of memorable experiences. And then the work that I was proud of at the time. Like, I'm really good with spreadsheets, really good with some data visualization tools. I can do some good stuff there. But like, all of that was to the end of like big evil corporate overlords. So I was like, oh man, maybe I could make beer. Maybe I could make beer. So I went to the Beer Nut down off State Street and talked to them. And they're like, you need to read this book, John Palmer's How to Brew.
Hey.
Hey.
And if you think you can do that, read the book. If you think you can do it, come back and we'll buy some equipment.
Wow.
And
I like that they didn't just sell you a bunch of stuff. They were like,
I also was already in purchasing. So I'm not a good person to sell stuff to. Cause I've been dealing with like $100 million contracts. You can't salesman me. So read the book. I was in, and I was traveling a lot for work. So I was in Mexico City actually, when I was reading the book. I was like, yeah, I think I could definitely do this. And came back, bought like the brewer's best starter kit bucket to brew in, brewed my first batch, came out not great, but like, I didn't care because it was the beer that I had made. And
I meant something to you, right?
Yeah. 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 Like, I made this, I caught the bug. I went all in. Within a month, I had three different buckets I was brewing in. Within 6 months, I think I had like six different carboys that I was like constantly rotating out.
Yeah.
There was a time somewhere in there where was the first time that I'd gotten like fully drunk on my own beer,
Which
was a surreal experience. Like it wasn't just good enough to drink. It was like good enough to crush and get drunk off of, with one of my friends, the guy that I was living with at the time. And yeah, after that, I don't know. It was just kind of like this spiritual experience of, I made this beer, then I got drunk off of this beer. I think this is something I could get into. And yeah, the rest is history. I ended up, we moved to a place just south of here in the Gateway. I had 11 different carboys going at a time. I had built this first kegerator. And then I started kegging. I'm like, okay, cool. Now I only have three beers at a time. Well, that's not very fun. I need to build a second one. So now I've got nine beers on tap. And so at my peak of homebrewing, there was constantly nine beers rotating through all the time.
Oh, that's really cool.
And my first 100, 150 batches, I don't think I brewed the same beer twice. So I was just like going all over the place. And then the next couple hundred, I like really started dialing into, I need to figure out, like, not just go wide, but go deep in a single style. So I started basic pale ale, did 20 or 30 iterations of a pale ale just to see like little nuances and like, oh, what's the difference between these two different base malts? Or like, what if we bitterness levels changing or different hops that we're using throughout
this yeast versus this yeast?
Yeah. I mean, most of it came down to, in the beginning, I was going on a whole bunch of different yeast and I was like, this is a rabbit hole. Let's go 1056 or 001, like some Chico strain to like make it clean and easy and focus on the other ingredients. But yeah, I went wild with homebrewing, and then I was trying to get into a brewery constantly to like actually work. And I think
what time was this?
This was like 2016. I guess by the time I had really exploded, it was like 2018. I won a medal in the Beehive Brew Off for a mead that I made on a whim.
Hey, yeah. There's a lot of entries in that one.
Yeah. So I got a gold medal for my mead, And that was another one of those solidifying factors of, okay, I have to do this forever and ever and ever. That was like a drug of, you know, not only do I make good stuff, but I make like award-winning good stuff. Yeah. So in 2018, that's when I was probably at the height of it. In 2019, I know that I was the biggest customer of the Beer Nut outside of, this was before Grid City had opened. So Jeremy had a corporate or like his account for Grid City that he was using. And then Patrick had one for, his stuff out in Park City. Those are the only two guys that spent more money than me at Beer Nut in 2019.
Top three thing, huh?
That's another award.
Yeah, yeah.
I should have given you a medal for that.
I should. No, then I started working there.
Oh, you worked there?
Yeah, I worked there for a short bit, which was great for the homebrewing because it was a huge discount on ingredients. And I was only working there like once or twice a month, but then like spending $1,000 a month there. Well, after the discount, it was way less than that. They were like, hey, man, like you're making way more money off of the discount than you are. Yeah, sounds about right. But I still like the guys, Chaz and Devin. They're wonderful. They're super knowledgeable. I can attribute a lot of my passion of going into craft beer to having some sort of knowledgeable resource like them to like just talk to a person. Internet forums are great. Books are great. But like talking to someone to be able to like work through, you know, whatever you're trying to get out is like a little bit better.
Yeah, because you can get that rebound.
Yeah. And yeah, you get the nuance of the conversation. Like, oh man, I want to go into when I started getting my conical set up and temperature temperature control for the fermentation, like talking to Chaz about like, well, how quick can I get a lager turned around? Like, a lot of the books are saying like 3 months. And he's like, eh, homebrew, you can do it in a month. You can easily do it in a month. Yeah, like, there's other ones you can spend longer on, but yeah. No, it was good.
And then 2019, 2020 hit.
2020 hit, shitstorm. We ended up buying this place, got married to Brenda. It was a good time. I ended up getting injured during that time, so I didn't brew for a good portion of 2020.
Oh, shit.
And it was bad news. Like, 2020 was not a great year. But I picked it back up in 2021 and, like, went through it. Still trying to get into a brewery. I think I've applied to almost every brewery in the Valley at that point. Anytime a job posting would come up, but yeah, nobody wants a home brewer in their brewery.
Really? That's fascinating. I think I disagree with that because I think I would take a home brewer over someone that had no experience because you're still passionate.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's to me interesting that you couldn't land a job.
Well, also, I was making like three times as much in my corporate job than I was.
So there's that.
I could have.
Because
but you, for not a living wage.
You don't become a brewer to make money. I think Jackie King told me that. If you want to make money, don't become a brewer. Sorry. You ain't going to be sugar mom or daddy.
Yeah.
That simple.
But 2021 was, or actually it was 2019 was my first business plan iteration. Redid it in 2021. Did it again. I guess 2020, there was a time where it peaked where I was like, oh, yeah, we'll do this. 2021, it happened again. And then now I'm on like the fourth iteration of a business plan for a brewery. Now, after working at Shades with a little bit more of a realistic understanding of costs and how certain styles sell.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially at Shades. You probably have seen a wide range of what can and can't sell.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to find, like Shades has a little niche. They do their lactose sours or their cream ales or whatever they're calling them.
Right.
And some of them do well, some of them don't, but still, Hazy IPA is their top seller.
How did you score the job at Shades?
Oh man, they had put a post up. The two guys had left. They'd put a post up on Instagram and I hit them up. And I went in for an interview. They hit me up for an interview and I went in and we didn't talk about my experience. We didn't talk about like anything brewing related. They're just like, oh, you work at the Beer Nut? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, cool. That works. So this is our place. And pretty much handed me the job on the spot.
No way.
Which was insane. Like,
when was that? 2021 or 2022?
That was 21. That was August.
Oh, wow. 21.
Yeah.
So it's almost a year in the brewing industry then.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes to like commercial brewing.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's it like to be on the commercial side of brewing?
Commercial side is good because you get to see. So what I liked about homebrewing was that you could share like a craft or an art with like your friends and people around you. And you could see like, oh, this beer did really well. This keg kicked in 5 days. This keg has been lingering around for a couple of months. Like, you see that same thing on a larger scale. Instead of doing 5 gallon batches and serving out like 53 beers. Now it's like 1300 gallons, 30 barrels. And seeing that same thing on a larger scale is, it's got that same kind of like endorphin rush of like, oh man, people like certain beers. People like this a lot. And it's nice to share it out there. On the larger scale, there's things that I didn't like. One of the things I wanted to get into the commercial side of things to learn is yeast management.
Okay.
Cause at the homebrew level, I'm like new pitch every single time. And that's perfectly fine. But when you put when you do the numbers, it's not financially viable to do fresh pitch every time. And so seeing how different methods of yeast management to like reharvest your yeast or using, like we've got a Chico 7-barrel brink and a, I don't know what the strain is, some lager yeast 7-barrel brink that we continually feed and continually pull from. And then we've got brinks of Kvik, little tiny half-barrel brinks of Kvik where we're harvesting from one batch, throwing it in the other. But Kvik is so resilient. You don't really need to, like, you don't need to take care of it. It'll do whatever the hell it wants.
It really does. So cold, warm, yeah. Sleeping, awake, yeah, everything.
Yeah.
You're right. So you have in front of us a shit ton of Shades beers.
Some Shades beers.
So why? What's the point of these Shades beers in front of us?
So I brought some of the Shades beers that I'm most proud of. The Hogshead barrel age, that was when Patrick was still there. We had sampled some barrels and they wanted to blend it down. And we were like, what if we don't blend it down? And we just put all these barrels together and then just package it as is. And so that Hogshead is really good. Slick was the first one I got to kind of like revamp where we cleaned up the grain bill, changed the hopping schedule, changed like the dry hopping schedule on it. Going back to Cali, that was a three-part collaboration where me and Marcio talked about a recipe, then me and Patrick had like refined it a little bit more, and then I went back to my homebrew stuff, and I was like, we've really been shooting by the hip, and everything I've done in the past is like going through Brewer's Friend or like Beersmith or something like that. So I went by the numbers, and I was like, we gotta like pull back our bittering hops. We gotta pull back our grain bill.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the going back to Cali was like the first recipe that I'd put together, brewed in a can. Oh, that's nice.
Congrats, man. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah. The can your own beer and have it out there. Yeah, out
it feels loud. Nice. It feels nice.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And then I brought silly beer, the Tropic Like It's Hot.
Tropic Like It's Hot. Who named that one?
Tanya.
Hey.
Tanya's kind of a genius.
If there's any like kitschy names that you're like, that's very cheesy, but I'm laughing a little, it's me.
I got one.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Gay.
For 50 Shades of Gray is an extremely problematic.
I didn't say gray, I said gay.
I know, but it's going off of 50 Shades of Gray, which is a problematic representation of BDSM community.
Oh. I can't believe it. Oh, man, Don, we'll talk about this after
hours. It's a great one, but
we got support.
That book is garbage.
Oh, shit. Okay, and the last one you have right there.
That is actually Patrick's Amber Ale. It's super hoppy for an amber ale, but I think it came out really good. It looks gorgeous. Nice, nice dark amber color. And that's one of the ones I daily drink. So,
oh, yeah. So, Tanya, which one do you want to break down right now?
That's a great question. I get to choose?
Yes, you get to choose.
Let's start.
I'll give you one of five options.
Look and listen. I choose the Hogshead.
Oh.
Going big.
So why not start out with a bang? Why do we have to build up to it? Let's just go for it.
So, Don, tell us more about this one. This is an imperial ale aged in bourbon barrels.
So it's the Sweet Dreams porter that we have.
Is that a pastry stout?
There is no lactose in this.
Okay.
Yeah. And just a regular-ass sweet porter that We aged in whiskey and rye barrels. And I think the mix of this was 3 rye barrels and 1 whiskey barrel. And put it all together. And when we were doing sensory on it, it just, like, the flavors came through so strong. There's a huge barrel. Like, it's kind of like licking a barrel in the best way.
Licking a barrel sounds terrible. Splinters everywhere.
Tongue splinters.
My bad. I can smell it from here. It's great.
Yeah. So huge barrel tannins. You get some of the whiskey and the rye in there. It's a porter, so it's not like roasty, toasty, acrid bitterness in there.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
I like that nose. I want to make a candle out of this. I really do. Tanya, what's...
You keep saying this on your podcast. Do you know how to make candles?
No, I don't. If you guys know how to make candles,
let me
know.
Little known fact about David. We just called him out. He's a novice candle maker. He's got a little shop set up at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yankee Candle is his big inspo.
Serenity by David.
Serenity by David. By Taste Masters.
Candle Masters.
Are we going there right now?
No. I just... Give me one.
So I get a little bit of chocolate. I don't get... Soy sauce, thank God, because soy sauce, I would throw it in someone's face. Yeah.
Umami is something that needs to be used with restraint.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's lovely.
Light in the body. There's a lot of these barrel-aged stouts that get so thick and heavy. A
little rye bite, but I like that. It's gentle rye bite,
yeah.
But not over the top.
Yeah.
Not too roasty. I still got like burnt chocolate, but not like gross burnt chocolate. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, it's like just a dark, like, a dark, dark chocolate.
Yeah. How you doing? Yeah. Wow.
I mean, it's definitely nice and boozy. I believe the can just says like 9% or greater.
That's how it says.
It says greater than 9% on
greater than 9%.
It tastes like a 32%. Jesus. Not true. And that purple is a great purple, by the way. We call it plum purple, a sweet plum.
It's the same color we have on our Berliner Weiss. So.
A gentle, a wispy purple. We call it wispy purple.
Is that going to be the color of your candle?
Like wispy purple. A Hogshead Reserve wispy purple. I can't copy everything, Tanya. I got to be original somehow. Not bad. Not bad at all. Where are the barrels from again? Yeah, the rye and the bourbon where?
I think they said it was from High West.
High West. Of course. Yeah, Brenda, what do you think about this? One of my favorites. One of your favorites, huh? This one's kind of dangerously crushable.
Yeah. The lack of like heavy, heavy body or heavy residual sweetness makes it a little bit too crushable.
It is much easier to drink than you would expect.
Yeah, I thought...
Can attest to this personally by drinking too many.
I thought I would kind of like choke on it because it would be a high ABV. Like, oh shit, that's going to burn my chest hairs off, you know, but it doesn't. Not bad, guys.
Well, I will say that Shades does have a way of making very high ABV things taste like they're not high ABV.
Yeah. And what did you say this was? 9+?
Yes.
9. It literally.
I couldn't find it on there.
On the can, it says greater than 9%.
Which he did bring a 10% as well.
I like that.
We'll see if we make it there.
So what's your favorite? Is this the only barrel-aged beer they do at Shades?
Every year they do like the Hogshead Reserve, but it's always different. And then some of them do really great. Some of them have been a little bit weird.
Who's Hogshead, for those who don't know?
Who's Hogshead?
Is there like a certain – is it like a – It's a brewery, a company, barrel. What's a Hogshead? Do we know?
I imagine it's something that Trent came up with in the early days of Shades, and it's just kind of carried on.
Well, Shades used to be, wasn't it a meatpacking plant or
Shut
something?
The hell.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what
I
it
think
is.
That there, I could there's just
Hogshead,
be making.
There is Hogshead like deli meats. Like, that's a thing.
There is, yeah.
I mean, I may just Hogshead be creating mustards. A totally fake narrative, but no, it might have true. Something to do with that.
I don't know if that's where it came from, man, but it did used to be a meatpacking
rabbit
facility.
Hole right now. And Brenda is our fact checker. What is going on right
She's
now?
She's defining.
Hogshead means a measure of capacity of wine equal to 36 gallons, 63 gallons. Wow, that's,
okay.
Wow.
Well,
wow. We just
that's not a
lost.
63 gallon can. I don't know if you knew.
Brandon, we got lost just barely. Oh my God. But besides that, is there anything in barrels that you guys have done that you have enjoyed?
Other than this one? No, we haven't really been paying too much attention to the barrel program right now. We won at Idaho. We won an award for not this one. I thought it was this one. It was another one. It was like a gin barrel aged Hogshead Reserve. I think they put the Trappel in there.
What?
Something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
This year? This last year?
This like a couple, like weeks, couple ago. Weeks ago? Yeah.
Oh, shit. I missed that one.
Yeah. I thought it was this one, but it was...
Aphrodite and something.
Yeah, and it's in bottles. That's how old that one is. Like, they haven't done bottles since 2018, so it's a fairly old beer. That
but aged really well, huh?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, on that note, Dom, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back because I have some questions about Shades Beer and more in-depth of Tanya. Cool. Can we go down that route? A quick shout out to one of our most supportive sponsors, Hopkins Brewing Company. Located within the heart of Sugar House at 1048 East, 2100 South in Salt Lake, Hopkins has a wide variety of awesomeness, such as trivia nights on Tuesdays, incredible local live jazz Wednesday and Thursday nights, small batch beers on Friday, made by a local legend of a brewer, Matt Yeager, and brunch on the weekends. Hopkins is the place to be. They got awesome swag, you gotta go. All their food and beer is made from scratch with local and sustainable ingredients. While visiting Hopkins and upon checkout, use the code TASTEMASTERS to receive 15% off your ticket order, excluding alcohol, of course. That's right. Use the code TASTEMASTERS to receive 15% off one of the hottest spots in Utah. All right, friends. So we're back, refreshed, energized, ready to go. Don, you ready to get hit by some questions?
Let's do it.
Here's a question for you. So you did a lot of brewing. Mm-hmm. I feel like you like brewing. I'm just going to go on a whim there.
Yeah, a little bit.
You kind of like brewing?
Allegedly.
Cool. Have you ever fucked with the idea of distilling?
I have done some experiments into ice distillation.
And?
It was on accident, but it worked out pretty well.
Favorite distilleries in Utah right now? Give me three, if you can.
Three. Is it Hollystone? They do good. No particular order.
Sure. Yeah. Hollystone's one of them. Yeah. Yeah. In Murray.
They do like the pea flower gin.
Butterfly Beet. It's got that purple gin. I will say it right now. The prettiest gin in Utah, period.
Make some very, very pretty cocktails with that. Jackrabbit Gin, was it?
Yeah, Beehive, you're right.
Yeah, Beehive Distilling. They're right across the street from us at Shades, and that is my go-to for... I'm going to do martinis. I'm going to use Jackrabbit Gin for the most part.
Stirred, not shaken.
Oh, I shake it the fuck up.
Yeah, he does make a good martini. I can attest to that.
Hey.
But also now I'm like, it's right around the corner. Why don't you take me on dates there?
Let's go, Sean.
We work so hard. Jeez.
And number three.
Who is number three? Okay. So... when we went out to Idaho this last time, was it Ogden's Own Distillery, the Porter's Fire? They gave us a bunch of their like canned cocktails that they make or just started making recently. Super impressed by like every single one of them.
Good.
I mean, if I'm going to go in for cocktails, I'm going to make a cocktail. But the fact that they were able to bring that together in a can and serve it in a convenient thing, I think that was...
Thinking about that, hiking or flowing down the river and you had one of those.
Yeah.
Get fucked.
And like, I think their lowest ABV one was like 7% and it went all the way up to like 10 or 11%. That was nuts.
Yeah.
When I'm doing cocktails, I'm going to go through the process to make the cocktail, but.
Cause you're an artiste, I feel like, right, Tanya?
He puts all of himself into everything that he does. And like when he says you need good attention to detail to brew, like, this man puts attention to detail in everything. I could be like, hey, Don, tie my shoe for me. And he'd be like, well, I've done some analytics on a couple of different ways to tie a shoe. And according to the formula that I put into my Excel spreadsheet, I think this is our best method of doing so.
Don, do you disagree?
She's not entirely wrong.
He does everything with finesse and passion. And yeah, like even the simple act of if I come over here for cocktails, I A, know it's going to be a good time at the Dondo. But B, he's always just making really innovative, interesting, well balanced.
So when it comes to that, putting your mind and soul and heart into a beverage, the one you talked about, all the beverages you have laid out in front of us is the Cali IPA,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So
yep.
tell us about this one, because I want to break it down real quick.
So very clean grain bill. It's just I think our base malt was Pilsner on this. And then touch of Munich, touch of dextrose, just to give it a little bit of residual. Or dextrin malt, just to give it a little bit of residual sweetness on it. But I wanted it to be dry.
Okay.
Like mostly dry. I was looking for IPAs from the early to mid 2010s.
Triple C's, man.
Chinook, Cascade, Centennial. There's also Simcoe that we used in that. It's not on the label, but it's in there. So like a classic bitter dry IPA that's super boozy, extremely crushable, something that you can get drunk off. Like when you talk about IPAs in Salt Lake City, you've got Hops Rising, you've got Detour, you've got Elefino that are like the big ones that you always see at the bar. And so right. I wanted to like cast out, like lay my cards down for what I thought would be a competitor for those guys.
When you brought this idea to Shades, what did they say about this?
Oh, I was like, let's do a West Coast IPA. And they're like, oh, okay, let's do a single IPA. I was like, no, we need something that sells. We need to like Utah, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. Like the Utah environment is people go for ABV all the time. So when you're looking at, when people look at a beer menu at Slackwater or wherever else, a lot of people will tend to like, oh, what's the highest?
Yeah, but is that unfortunate though? I want the most bitter. I don't know
if it's fortunate. I think if you can make a high ABV crushable IPA.
Okay, crushable though. But are people going for it? Let's get fucked up the fastest for the cheapest?
Yeah, obviously. That's why for so long, okay? Hops Rising was $5 a pop. That shit was great. Devastator, $5. Is like these 9-8% beers that there is a utilitarian aspect to them. They taste good, but also they get you drunk and they sell well.
So I feel like the older you get, your palate kind
of, oh, definitely.
So I want the most bitter thing, yeah. So I can taste it.
Yeah.
So is this over the top bitter on purpose, or is this, I'm not saying it's bitter. I haven't tasted it today yet.
Yeah.
But did you go for a little more IBUs? What's the IBUs in this one? Do you know top of your head?
That's always a weird calculation because we do, even through our knockout for a 30-barrel batch, you're still sitting at 200 degrees for another 45 minutes. So I think I claimed 75 to 90 IBUs on this.
Hey, yo, homie.
Yeah. But I don't know. IBUs are always subjective to the individual tasting them because – It's not a hard science.
I mean, I make a I'd make a candle out of this one.
I mean, it's the sea hops are, you're never going to go wrong.
Yeah, Centennial, Chinook, and Cascade. Yeah, the classic seas, right? Mm-hmm. Tanya, what do you think about this beer, by the way?
I think a sign as somebody who, you know, whether you are a brewer working in a brewery. We started drinking this off the fermentation tank as soon as we could. That's how much we all loved it. That's what everybody was walking around, having a drink after work, and then still continued when we hang out after work and have a drink. This is what we go to. So when you're that excited about your own beer, it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
So this has definitely been my favorite since, you know, since the first time I tasted it.
So I like this a lot. That residual sweetness, though, is what I think makes that just, yeah, it hooks you.
There's like a flavor, like you can't talk about flavor in a single dimension. It's like a thing that you experience over time, especially with beers like this or like really good wines. You have like an seriously 3 to 5 second flavor experience when you take a sip. So with this, bitterness comes up front, a little bit of sweetness there, but the bitterness, I think, overtakes it, and it kind of like lingers and builds. and it like makes you want to take another sip to like come back to that beginning bit where there was some sweetness there and like forcing you to come back and take another drink.
You're right. I get that graininess towards the back.
Yeah.
And that graininess, that malt bill, I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. This is not just a bitter bomb. It's not a bitter bomb. Yeah. I look at an 8.8% beer and I'm like, oh fuck, get wrecked. Like, yeah. You're sitting here over here, 70 plus IBUs. I'm like, oh my God. No, man, I wouldn't. I mean, I'm still going back for more taste. Yeah. And when I remember texting you this, sending you a message. I'm like, this is great, dude. Good job. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Like, this is kind of your baby in a way.
Yeah, yeah. And it warmed my heart when I saw that message. I
was like, oh, thanks, man. No, I appreciate that. No,
sweet. How sweet.
I really did enjoy it because they don't make West Coast IPAs anymore.
I think there's going to be a West Coast revival.
You think so?
Like hazies. I love hazies.
You think you're gonna, why do you like hazies? I'm curious.
I love hazies because, I mean, it kind of comes down to the same utilitarian thing. You can get an 8-9% beer that tastes like mango, guava, pineapple. Drink it a bunch.
Sure.
And it's delicious. It tastes like you're drinking juice and it ends up like, and the most important thing, I don't like fruited hazies. I just like
hops. Ah, okay.
Like just all the flavor derives from
you're
hops.
A brewer.
Yeah, well, you know, there's people that do fruited hazies.
what pisses me off is I sit at the bar sometimes and I hear the words, oh, this doesn't taste hazy enough for me. Like, hazy has become a taste profile. What?
I mean, so I feel like you have to separate IPAs out by category. Because IPAs, when the hazy and West Coast Venn diagram, the only thing that links them together is the fact that they're hop-based. Those are extremely different beers, though.
Like, but we're going off looks and appearance, which get you, what, 5 points total?
And on this line, the Slick City is a hazy IPA. It is Citra Mosaic Galaxy. It has high krausen and dry hops.
Okay.
It is all the juicy, hazy flavors. That beer comes out clear.
Really?
Yeah. So it is...
Motherfuckers.
Yeah. It is in the vein of a hazy, but... It drops clear. One of the reasons, Chico yeast. Like, unless you're using London 3 or Juice, or I think Imperial just came out with another hazy variety, something along those lines. Like, it's not going to, the flocculation is just going to drop out, and it's always going to drop clear.
So, Donald, I'm going to tell you this right now. I think Shades has a underrated and unique brewer within their walls, and that's you, man. You give a fuck about the beer. Now, I'm not saying Shades doesn't give a fuck about the beer. Like, don't. I'm not saying that at all.
They care.
They do care. And they are probably, they've brought back the most medals in the past 3, 4, 5 years than anyone else has. But you actually care about how beer tastes, how beer is consumed, and how beer is perceived to the general public.
Yeah.
So if I were to give you the keys to Shades Brewing, but somehow I just like, hey, you are now the owner, big dick swinging, of Shades Brewing Company. What's the first thing you do?
First thing I do is focus more on the 5% beers. Like, we've got the Hoppy Pils, we've got the Czech Pils, the Premium Lager. Those are all right. But there needs to be non-hoppy 5% beers that are available on tap. Because other than that, it's all sours. It's all sours. And sours, like, are great, like, they've got their place in brewing, like the Sounds Game and the Passion Fruit Sour that we did this year. I think both of those are really good, but at the same time, sours are hard to drink. I've got acid reflux. I cannot fucking, I can't get drunk off of a super intense sour, be in pain all night long. So doing a refocus on classic styles that you can put out on tap, like 5% stuff. A good example of that is something we have on tap on here that we can actually try. Me and Tanya actually brewed.
Tanya, what did you brew? Oh my God.
Don and I decided that we don't spend enough time together at work, so we often hang out outside of work. So we had a
travesty
homebrew day, and we made a brown ale.
Yep.
What?
Northern English Brown.
What did you guys call it? Can I guess?
We haven't named it yet.
Sounds brown.
We haven't named it. You haven't even tasted it yet.
Yes, I will taste it. I haven't been to the Dondo for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, same. I've never been to the Dondo, so.
I'm a frequent flyer here.
You get the miles.
Yeah, I punch her card every time she comes.
So you made it brown.
Yeah.
Here at the house. And with Tanya. Tanya made this, right?
Yeah.
So, Don, talk to you. We're about to try the Dondo brown. Yeah. And I want to know, tell me the recipe.
I can tell you the recipe. It's literally in brewing classic styles. It's the Northern English brown. It's called, I think they call it the Nut Castle. The Nut Castle brown, because it's an offshoot of Newcastle.
Yeah.
But it's got, in its best, it's got like a hazelnut type flavor to it.
Oh, you were telling me about this. Right, motherfucker. God damn.
And it's all malt derived. It's Victory and Pale Chocolate. They kind of like make that combo.
Thanks for telling me that, by the way. That's fantastic. Yeah. I'm going to steal that one day.
And this is a good crushable beer. It's not hop focused. It's malt focused. It's also not a lager. You can turn this around in 2 weeks and it's going to turn out beautiful. I would do more things like this. I would I would literally just go through the Brewing Classic Styles book. And be like, oh, you know what's really cool? This recipe right here. And like, just do these basic classic styles. Because if you can do those styles well, you can do anything. Like, you can do, anyone can throw fruit into beer. Anyone can throw shit into barrels. Anyone can, like, hop anything up. But, like, delicate styles. One of the things I focused on in homebrewing 2 years ago, like, I want to figure out how to do, like, a proper blonde ale. Which is just like, it's like an ale. It is the easiest drinking ale there is, you know, like very delicate malt flavors, tiny bit of hops. Just, it's like the lager of the ale world.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. And so dove into that. I did a couple dozen iterations of it to like figure out like, oh, what's that residual sweetness you need? Cause if you go too dry, it kind of tastes weird. If it's too sweet, then it's cloying and you can't really drink it at all. You don't want it to turn into like what feels like a hoppy pilsner because it's its own thing from that. So
what's the style you haven't brewed yet that you want to brew?
That I haven't brewed yet that I want to brew. Doppelbock. I haven't done one of those. I already know.
Like the sounds of it.
Yeah. I mean, like this is your Devastator. This is Level Crossing just did one. Or did one a couple months ago. Their Doppelbock, I think, it turned out really great. And then you had like the triple Bock, or the one that TF did. It was like a barrel aged Bock beer.
Collaboration they did with. I have one in my fridge just sitting there aging. But yeah, I got you.
But you get like multi characteristics, all derived from like a combination of yeast and. Malt, you get like fruity plum. You get like, and it's a lager. It's a super, super clean lager that just is, you know, 8% and also a very dynamic flavor profile.
Yeah. Damn. Okay.
I would like to know, as a rebuttal question, what was your biggest homebrew disaster?
Biggest homebrew disaster. Okay, so
I was got a give couple you answers for this. Options, but go for it.
So I went through Randy Mosher's book, Radical Brewing. He's got a lot of really good recipes in there. Like, we should start incorporating that book into like Shade's repertoire because he's got some crazy stuff in there that 100% align with Shade stuff. But he has a brown ale in there where the malt bill is like 95% just brown malt.
Ew.
Based off of a historic style. This is, but like modern malts are not historic malts. And so I went into the Beer Nut and I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this brown ale out of this book, Radical Brewing. And I'm like, yeah, it's like 13 for a 5 gallon batch, like 13 or 14 pounds brown malt. I think there was something caramel in there. And I remember Chaz was like, you sure? And I was like, that's what the fucking book says. I don't know, man.
I'm going by the book.
And so I tried it. And because it's a modern brown, Harley fermented down. And then it tasted, because there was so much brown malt in there, it just tasted like burnt popcorn. It was so bad. So bad. Undrinkable. That was the first beer that I like. I was like, this
he
is.
He dumped it.
Like, entire five. I'm like, this is not even worth
trying to pawn. Did it hurt your soul to dump it?
It did, because I was like, well, what did I do wrong with this? And then I kept going back, and I was like, well, brown malt isn't, like, fermentable. You can't fucking make a, you can't use brown malt as a base malt.
Yeah, no. You said 95%?
Yeah. It's not.
Ew.
Yeah.
That's so ew.
Radical Brewing. It is. That is the recipe that he puts in there. There's a lot of really good recipes that he has in there. That was not
I think you need to learn that lesson, though. I think as a brewer, you need to dump a beer down the drain.
Oh, yeah.
Because once you do, you're going to be like, fuck.
Yep.
Because the first beer I ever dumped down the drain, I almost came in tears. I really did. I thought, holy shit, I am a shitty brewer. I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing.
It hurts.
Fuck me. Every single time, here's my boots.
Every single time there was a failure, because there's been more than one. That's not the only one. There's been multiple failures. Every time there's a failure like that, it hurts the point of like, fuck, I'm not going to brew for a little bit. Like, just like, what did I do wrong? There was, once I started doing temperature control fermentations, didn't quite understand a diastole rest when I first started doing that. And so I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to ferment this beer out 64 degrees the entire time. Yeah, it was some IPA I had done, and then keg it up. I'm like, this tastes like straight butter. Let's say straight, like, diacetyl, 100%.
You know, if you're in Europe, it's great. But here, no, we don't like
popcorn
that.
Popcorn and butter.
Yeah, there you go. I should have done a brown ale diacetyl beer.
I would invite over the people that I don't really like that much. And I'd be like, we're having a movie night. I brewed this special beer.
Beautiful. It tastes, yes.
You know, then you don't have to waste anything. And also, maybe you'll never see them again.
Yeah.
But
dumping that beer, though. It's worse than your dad leaving you.
It hurts. You know? Especially when, like, you spend 6-7 hours making a 5-gallon batch. Done. God. It's a day's worth of work that you just pour down the drain.
I haven't had to do that yet.
I'm having flashbacks. We're gonna have this beer real quick because I ghosts of Christmas past. That I'm a malt head, and that maltiness right now. Tony, can you smell us at least?
Yeah.
This is just. Could you make
really good. This is my first. I'm a virgin to my own beer.
Yeah. We.
Oh, that's damn good.
Yeah. It's a little bit drier than I want, a little bit thinner bodied than I would want. I changed some things. So this was the first batch that I brewed after I went pro. First homebrew batch that I did.
After I went pro. Do you hear that?
After I went pro.
Sorry.
Oh my God. Can I get your autograph?
You could, I guess.
Maybe at work tomorrow and just scribble it on.
I'll write it in caustic.
One of the tanks.
Yeah, write it in caustic on a tank.
A little more dry than you thought?
Yeah, so when I had made this before, I was doing, like, it's straight homebrew recipe. I was going for 153 degrees mash rest, a little bit of residual sweetness in there. You touch it every 15 minutes to stir it up and then close it up and that's it. And then at Shades, like, we've got rakes in our mash tun, and the rakes are going the entire time. So I was like, oh, man, like, I should be like, mixing this shit up a little bit more. Maybe I can get a little bit more efficiency out of this grain. And I did. But I also lowered, because we're talking 5-gallon batch, so right. It's just like a 10-gallon, like, igloo cooler that I'm using as a mash tun. I dropped the temperature so much throughout it. Like, we ended up at the end, like, 148, 149.
Okay.
So
dry.
It increased the efficiency and also increased the fermentability and no residual sweetness.
I mean, I get a little bit right now.
There's a little bit there, but with a little bit more, that hazelnutty flavor comes out. There was one batch I did. I've brewed this dozens of times. One of the times I did it, I was like, oh, I want to do like a smoked beer, like a smoked malt. So I did half a pound of peat smoked malt in there. Which was too much for a 5-gallon batch.
Yeah, good, like, for you, dude.
Yeah.
Ballsy. Dump that one, too?
Fuck. I didn't dump it. When it sat for a while, because it was like, this is an intense flavor, but it'll mellow out over time. Sure. And it did. It took probably 2 or 3 months for that keg to kick, whereas its brother, just a regular-ass amber, kicked in two weeks, 3 weeks. Yeah.
That makes me happy. Yeah. It makes me so happy. Being in Utah. Oh, go for it, Tanya.
I was going to say, I like that a couple of times you've prefaced a beer by saying regular ass. And I think that we should just make a beer where it's like, maybe our brown is just a regular ass brown.
Regular ass brown.
Tanya, you're the best at names, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, hands down. Pants down. You are the best in Salt Lake County. I think you're the best.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll give you that one. Cause like,
I like to be creative. I like a good pun, even if it's just over the top and bad. And I mean, I think it's great to make great beer, but to market it, to pick the right label, to pick a name that people see. And like the Sounds Gay I'm In, it was a great beer, but I guarantee you that people were just showing up to pride parties with it because of the name.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, it was a combination of things. It just also happened to be a delicious fucking beer, but...
We just had someone come in the other day, pick up two cases, some of the last two cases we had, and they're like, oh, didn't know anything about this beer at all, but I saw the name and I knew I needed it for this event.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you made another one, right? You named this Trop It Like It's Hot?
Yes.
So tell me about this Trop It Like It's Hot real quick.
It is dangerous. Very dangerous. It is 10% and it legitimately tastes like the Hawaiian Punch or like a Capri Sun. So picture yourself the like year with is a shitty 1993. Straw, you
like stab the hole, like,
you're trying to stab into your, except it gets you wasted.
What?
I mean, proceed with caution. It's delicious. I mean, it's got pineapple, guava.
It's a whole paragraph of ingredients.
It's a whole paragraph of fruits.
I got to hear this.
So what do we got? Ale brewed with pineapple, passion fruit, strawberry, guava, mango, coconut, and lactose.
So basically it had the whole repertoire, if you will.
Yep.
It was, yes. And Don and I can assure you that every ounce of fruit is in there. Because
every fruit is in there.
We are the ones that have to fruit all the beers.
Trop it like it's hot. Trop it like it's hot. And it's got the Hawaiian Punch kind of color to it.
It's got that vibe.
I remember when you showed this to me the first time and I laughed my ass off. Oh my God. Okay, this is the candle of the day right here. Brenda, this is the candle of the day.
Bringing it back to the candles, this guy.
I'm sorry. Can you guys help me make candles? Diaz reached out to me. She's like, I found a place that makes actual candles out of beer. Shut the fuck up. And I got really jealous.
People have used hops to make all sorts of stuff. I've seen like candles, essential oils. I took a bunch of hops from Uinta once when we had like wet cone hops and tried to make things with them and just failed miserably.
Can we come back to the Dondo and make a beer flavored candle?
Sure.
Whatever pleases your heart,
I
mean, David.
I feel like all we have to do is melt down paraffin wax and throw in some essential oils. And then
you make it sound so simple. Stop giving our secrets out. It's literally that easy. Stop. No, there's more to
it. Throw a fucking wick in there. Stop, light it guys. On fire.
There's love, passion, fruits, okay. Lactose.
No, there is actually like a whole art to making candles.
Thank you, John. I've kind of learned.
There's different qualities of candle. Like your regular column candle is bullshit. That's like some basic bitch shit.
Yeah, boo. We're talking about Tastemasters candles. Let's go.
Beeswax candles that you have to put into a mold that have like these hexagon shapes in them. And the way that it melts down, the wax doesn't drip on the outside. The wax is designed to drip to the internal bit of the candle. So you don't get any drips on the outside. Also, you utilize the entire bit of wax throughout. Like, not all candles are made the same. So I'll give it that much.
So on this episode of Candle Masters, we're going to be... Fuck.
Did I not tell
you? I can show you a nice candle. I've got a couple in the back.
I'll come back in a couple weeks.
He's got a spreadsheet about it somewhere.
We're doing this. By the way, Tanya, this is probably my favorite, not because you're here. This is my favorite smelling Shades beer of all time.
It does smell just
like. I think because I got strawberry and coconut right there.
It does. And it actually, when we first canned it, I was like, oh, I smell too much coconut. And in the couple of weeks since it's been canned, I think everything has melded together really beautifully. Yep. And I'm not getting any overbearing tones that like maybe in the beginning.
It's kind of hard for us because when some of these flavors are not just fruit puree. Like coconut's hard to get in. You can't just like throw toasted coconut in there and it's hope tough. That it comes out. Like, and so when you have the natural coconut flavoring that you're pouring into the beer, you smell it very distinctly. And then like with the Thai Tom Kha, with this, with anything we throw coconut in, that's the first thing that I pick out. It was like, oh, it smells like 90s sunscreen.
Yeah.
Don't say that.
I'm but saying
like, it's a single flavor aspect that like because I've had the concentrated version of it.
Gotcha.
I can pull that out.
But. This one's damn tasty. 10%.
10%.
Oh, that's dangerous because it tastes like Capri Sun.
Yeah, don't let those kids go in the fridge. They're gonna see.
Oh man, this is dangerous. Fuck shades. That's the quote of the day. I can't drink this because this is dangerous, man. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That is really tasty. And I this tastes like a Bubblicious gum. Like I want to just sit here and just chew the Bubblicious gum.
Yep.
It's a great summer beer.
Unfortunately. It's 10%, Tanya. Do you understand?
In moderation. I'm not.
Get fucked.
It's like in moderation. Goodness. It's not like we brought a six pack and we're like, hey, David, you don't get to leave until you finish six of these. Yeah, and
I mean, it seems like it right now. One of these
we'll
I can
pay for your lift home.
Yeah, it's in Utah County, girl.
Can't promise what Holly's going to do when
we'll
we send
you
back.
We'll throw you on the front runner.
Yeah. You know what? A lift seems generous. We're putting you on the front runner.
How's the Prius going to get back? Holly will be so mad.
She'll be like, wow, he was really responsible.
Thanks, Tanya. I'm glad you got my back. Thank you so much. So, Don, I have this question for you. Being a brewer, we came from no experience to home brewing for years, becoming a commercial brewer. What do you want to see more in Utah brewing scene?
What do I want to see more in Utah brewing scene? In Utah, we have a pretty wide variety of everything. Like there's no niche that hasn't been dove into. Shade Stiz or Sours, Toasted Barrel, and they were doing their thing. They did
RIP
some interesting sours. TF's got the lager game locked down. Everyone else has at least one big Belgian, like a Trappel. They've got a big IPA. They've got some sort of malty big beer. What do I want to see more? Honestly, what I want to see more in Utah brewing is to be able to put anything on tap. Ooh. That is the one thing that'll change the game for every single brewery where we won't have to be so ABV focused because you have to, from a cost perspective, you have to kind of figure out what's the cost of materials versus putting this into a can. You got to pay for the labor. You got to pay for the materials to do like a big beer out there. So there's no single IPAs. There's no like middle ground beers where it's like, oh, we're just at like 6% or 6.5%. It's always either you're on tap or you're balls to the wall. So what I want to see in Utah brewing is to go into any brewery and see, and this is something when I was in the UK, I saw all the time, you could have everything from a 2.5% beer to a 13% beer on tap. And you can walk in and get samples of all of it. Whereas here in Utah, like that middle ground doesn't exist because it's not financially viable from a consumer perspective. There's a utilitarian aspect where if you're going downtown and you're buying a beer, it's going to be whatever the highest bid is. Like, yeah. You're a lay consumer, like craft beer enthusiast. It's a different thing. Like people that go to the Beer Hive, they like go across the spectrum and see all the different things, but your lay craft beer connoisseur or your lay craft beer like consumer is not going to focus on that, and they're just going to go for high ABV or what's the cheapest I can get on tap. So putting anything on tap, having that wide variety, it's easier financially on the brewers, and then it'll also expose a lot of these other things that we don't really see so much on to like a wit beer. You don't want a 5% wit beer. It's like a 3.5 to 4% beer, but no one's really making them. There might be a couple wit beers that exist here in Utah, but I think Epic used to do one. I don't know. I didn't see it the last time I was there, but like a nice wit beer where you got coriander and chamomile flavors, but it's like a light, easy drinking beer.
A table beer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like not a thing here. Partially due to legislation, and then also it's not financially viable. So,
yeah. What drives you in the morning? What gets you excited to brew? Like, why do you still brew, dude?
My last job, the worst day at Shades is not even close to the best day at my last job.
Damn. Yeah. That's deep.
Yeah. When I come from a purchasing procurement background, worked for a big evil corporation.
McDonald's?
What? No, eviler than McDonald's.
Walmart's?
What? Wreck-It Benckiser.
Oh, shit.
No, it was a good company, but nothing we did. I don't know. It was a good place, but it was a very high intensity company. It was based out of the UK. There's like this American type business like culture where you've got to like tiptoe around, like, oh man, I don't think you like quite responding to this email quick enough, or would you be okay?
Stop.
And in the UK, it's just like, motherfucker, you're fucking up. And like this high intensity, like, you can't just be right. You have to be aggressively right in the face of people that want you to be wrong because it's more convenient
Hell
for them
like
to
that.
Be right.
Yeah.
So it was constantly fighting with people. It was constantly always turned up to 11 and then always high stake conversations because we're dealing in like purchasing and stuff like that, where a single fuck up in a conversation can cost you $100,000. Like it's insane. So it was a high stress environment that, I don't know. It wasn't great. I hated it. I loved the data and analytic part of it, but I hated like having to fight with people every single day, all the time. And then at the brewery, like, I don't fucking fight with anyone. Like, Stuck Mash. Oh my God.
Yeah, we haven't gotten in a fight yet. I'm looking forward to our first fight.
Really?
Who do you think's gonna win, Tanya? I can't even imagine.
Who's gonna win that one?
I like that you went straight to like, we're throwing punches outside the brewery. I was thinking more like, I was like, what would I get mad at Don for? Looking better in coveralls than I do? That's annoying.
I'd throw down.
That's annoying. I'm like, oh.
I'd run him over with my Prius.
Your bun looks better in your scrunchie than mine?
Yeah.
I can't picture actually having a fight with Don. He's
Don, I'll fight you.
All right.
Okay. But Tanya, what's something that you've learned from Don over these past couple months, the couple years?
I mean, besides every single thing I do in the brewery, I mean, I think a lot of it he's taught me is just that I can be a little bit like every day is the best or worst day of my life. So initially with really learning and fucking things up and feeling like, you know, having the feeling of throwing beer down a drain and saying, I can't do this, Don made me believe I could do it. So, I mean, besides just being a wonderful mentor in the brewery, I think I probably would have thrown in the towel if I had just any old person training me that was not so invested in also being my biggest cheerleader.
What's it like to have Tanya as your left-hand man?
Having Tanya as the left-hand man, it's actually quite great. What it's like is she makes these silly videos all the fucking time. And I don't ever, like, I'll just be on Instagram and I was like, I've been with you all day. When did you fucking film this shit? And today I caught her.
He did catch me today. I was, I make these playlists every month and I like to share them. And people, I make them all month. By the end of the month, they're like 9 hours long. So I was like, hey, here's my new playlist. It's called... What is it called? Something about pride.
A face to ride.
Yeah. It's like, hey, it's pride. You need a face to ride. Something along those lines. And then I was like, I should post like one of my favorite songs. And, you know, for me, they're like little bops that I listen to all around the brewery. So I was rinsing at the end of my CIP. So it was just water. Just at this point, I've finished my rinses. And I just... dunked my head in there in slow motion, you know, like very much like I'm under a waterfall. I'm listening to a good tune. And then just around the corner, I see Don just poking his head. And I was like, it's been 3 months and it's finally happened. And I was like, he caught me. I wasn't even embarrassed. I just said, oh, I got startled and I stopped recording. So now the end is going to be fast motion. And now I have to do it again. Thanks, Don.
And Don, what was your response to that?
I just wanted to see the video she recorded. Yeah. It was cute. It was cute in the end when you could see that she saw that I saw.
Yeah. And he's always a good sport. Like he says, like he agrees to these videos, but hey, sometimes he's got ideas too. And by the way, nobody's asking us to do that. Like, nobody is like, hey, for marketing, will you do this? We just do it. I'll send it to whoever is doing marketing. Right. And I'm like, use this if you want, don't if you don't. And, you know, Alex will always say like, oh my God, I loved that video so much. And I'm just like, hey, if you're not having fun while you're making beer, what's the point?
What's the point? Yeah. Yep.
And I think that, I know it might sound silly, but the fact that we have fun and make beer, it makes the beer better because we enjoy coming to work. We enjoy working together. It makes a huge difference.
You can always tell when there's passion in a project, no matter what it is. I like to always bring up the example of like, you'll have bands, like music bands, that they'll release their first album and it explodes. And then their second album will be kind of like, whatever. But that's because like their first album, every single time in the studio was like, this has to be it. Like, if we don't do this, it's not going to make it. And so you can feel that passion. You can feel their energy. And then like after they've already made it, their second album, they're like, oh, we've got studio time all the time. Let's shit out a couple of songs. We'll figure it out. And this sounds like us, right? I've seen it many times with many different bands across genres where they have their explosion album that was wonderful, and then after that it just kind of like goes downhill a little bit, but eventually they end up like, you know, learning where their passion is and it comes back. But no, I think seeing that passion in beer, in any sort of art form, like, you can feel it, you can taste it sometimes.
Sounds gay, I'm in.
We're still laying down our first track, so.
Yeah.
So you're still in the studio passionate.
We're still in the studio.
Aspect. We're sneaking into the studio when no one knows that we're there.
Oh, yeah.
Don't let that go. But Tanya, I love the fact that you're here. I love the fact that you're growing and you're becoming a better and better person and brewer at the same time. Thanks. Love the fact that you haven't given up.
Yeah.
And you continue to push yourself and be within that realm.
The truth is that Don and I, it's actually a mirage because we're just basically conjoined twins. So you really can't get one without the other.
Yeah, I see it. Oh, now I see it.
Yeah.
Did you notice?
Like, oh, goddamn. Right, I just realized it.
You
oh
didn't
my
see
God.
The part where
we're sitting in the same chair.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, but Don, it's an honor and a pleasure to be in the Dondo and interview you and talk to you and hear your story. I realized because through Tanya and everyone else I've talked to, you're this awesome individual who gives a fuck about beer, like passionately. And to sit here and like hear your story and like the fact that you truly do give a fuck, man, I wish there were more Dons out there. If there were more Dons in the brewing community in Utah, Utah would be that much better. Utah's already a great community to brew beer in. But if there are more of you, my man, I tell you what, we would be unstoppable. You have this fire about you that, man, dude, that's like when I saw you win up at Idaho, I texted you immediately. So I'm like, you deserve it, man. I don't care if you text me back or give a fuck about this, but I want you to know that I'm someone that gives a fuck and I notice it. You deserve it. And I think you have the soul and the spirit to make, like, if I could resonate Utah craft beer passion in one soul, it's you, man. Because, and Tanya's with me, I guarantee, like, holy cow, man, like, you're a great person, not only as a brewer but as a person. And I know that, you know, your wife sees the same thing, and every time when you get Fancy Don or whatnot, like,
Fancy Don and Brewery Don, that's all you get. There's no in between.
It's the best Don. Every one of those Dons is the best Don. Like, I've seen you with both Dons, Brewery Don and Fancy Don, and I love that Don.
I've only seen Fancy Tanya once.
I've seen Fancy
Tanya
tons
twice.
Of times.
Okay.
But
you used to be a bartender.
Oh, true.
Don't let it go, man. Don't let it go. That's all I ask. Thank you. If there's anything I can do for you or anything I can do to help, by God, let me know.
No, thank you. I think that the energy that I have, the energy that I've like cultivated over the years, it's not just me. Like, the homebrew community here in Utah is huge. Like, they really are so great. Latter Day Brewers, the Hot Bombshells, like all of these people they just do a wonderful job. I feel like I owe a debt to them because I've used like them so much to get to where I'm at now. And there was an interview I was listening to with another brewer who was way more important than me. But he got a scholarship to Siebel to go through all of that, like back in like 2010. And his philosophy on like brewing and like brewing education is that everything that he has, he needs to share with everyone else. And that's what I would like. I would like to, like, it's a small scale because I have not the same amount of knowledge, but anything that I have, I want to share with everyone, because as like stewards of the craft, stewards of like this 10,000 plus year tradition, it's our responsibility to kind of make sure that there is enthusiasm and that we've got new people coming in constantly to fulfill our roles, because we're not going to be here forever. We need to keep this tradition alive. I feel like there is a magic to beer in a way. It's like literally a magic potion. We're practicing what was classically considered alchemy. We're taking starches, turning them to sugars, introducing yeast, making alcohol, slap a health potion label on it. Good to go. You've got more stamina
for
now.
For real though. Oh my God. Don, you have been, no wonder Tanya is so drawn to you. God damn.
He's a magnetic man.
Yeah, you are, man. And like for reals, thank you so much for your time and give me your knowledge, experience, and history. Like the fact that I can sit here and hear more about you and share this story and be a mouthpiece for you, it's an honor, man. It really is.
And thank you.
God damn, I can't wait to come to the Dondo again. I can't wait to bring the Holly here to the Dondo. It'll be a great time.
Oh, yeah.
It's good times in the Dondo. It overlooks the city.
I see the smog.
It's got a nice thick little layer. Sunset.
I love it. I see the gateway right there. But Don, again, thank you so much. And
thank you.
Is there anything I can do for you or Taste Masters can do for you in the future? Is there anything we can help you personify your passion as a brewer or as a person?
I mean, keep doing what you're doing. I feel like your current track of like just talking to anyone in the community, it like builds up momentum for Utah's growing like brewing community. It's nothing compared to like where we're at in Colorado, where there's over 500 breweries just in Denver. But things like these podcasts help not only encourage people already in the industry, but also bring more brewers into the fold.
Hell yeah. And you should be in the fold, and you should be shout out on top of the like mountaintops, dude. Like you really should. So thanks, man. And on that note, Tanya, do you have anything for us tonight?
My only thought in closing would be that I will not attend another Taste Masters event if you're not selling Taste Masters candles. I'm going to hold you to this. I don't want you to give up your dreams. You can have more than one dream, and one of them is clearly the art of candle making.
I got this. I got this, guys. I got this. And I need your help, though, because Don just told us a recipe for it. We'll talk about this afterwards, but yeah. Good God.
I just think, I got a nice little t-shirt last time I was there. It was great, but you know what I would really put fucking some money candle towards? Some candles.
Boom. All right.
Some done ambiance in my house.
I could have a Kiedos candle. I could have a TF candle. I could have a Shades candle. Yeah, I could have a Strap Tank candle.
A lady comes over and they're like, is that a beer candle? And I'm like, yeah, baby, I'm not just a brewer.
Desert Edge? Boom. I love it. All right.
That's all. But no, thank you for having me again. It's a pleasure
coming,
to
I love
you. Hang with you and spend more time with Don. I like to keep it at a casual 60 hours a week. So thanks.
But again, thanks, Tanya. Thanks, Don. And on that note, my friends, until the next beverage, my friends.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.